Pull up a chair. I want to tell you about an airplane that spent the better part of 50 years lying in the dirt of the Mojave Desert, getting shot at on purpose, baking under a sun that cracks paint and turns aluminum into something that flakes away like old parchment. And I want to tell you how she came home. This is Radio Hangar. I'm Tail Dragger, and you're listening to The Hangar, where we keep the old birds alive by telling their stories. Today's story is about one of them in particular. Her name is Doc. She is a Boeing B-29 Superfortress, and right now, today, she is one of only two of her kind anywhere on this planet that can still fly. Let that settle for a second. Boeing built nearly 4,000 B-29s, 4,000 of the most advanced bombers of the Second World War, and out of all of them, you can count the ones that still leave the ground on one hand and have fingers left over. Two. That's it. Before I get any deeper into how Doc clawed her way back into the sky, let me tell you who's keeping the lights on here today. Today's show is brought to you by AviationSold.com. Aviation Challenge coins for every milestone in flight. Your first solo, your private, your instrument rating, all the way up the ladder. If you've earned it, they've got a coin for it. And here's the thing. I like about it, every coin tells a story, same as every airplane in this hangar does. You go put one in your pocket, and you'll know exactly what I mean. AviationSold.com. All right, let's go back to the beginning. Now, here's where it gets interesting. The B-29 was the airplane that ended the war in the Pacific, and it nearly broke Boeing to build it. It cost more to develop than the Manhattan Project. Think about that. The atomic bomb was the second most expensive program of the war. The airplane that carried it was the first pressurized cabin so the crew could fly high and warm and breathing easy at 30,000 feet. Remote-controlled gun turrets aimed by an early analog computer. Four Wright, twin-row 18-cylinder engines, each one putting out 2,200 horsepower, each one with a nasty habit of catching fire if you so much as looked at it wrong. More airmen died testing and training in that airplane stateside than you'd ever want to know. Our girl Doc rolled out of the Boeing plant in Wichita, Kansas. And you want to hold on to that detail, because it matters later in a way that'll put a lump in your throat. Wichita, the air capital. She was built there in 1944, came off the line, and the war ended before she ever fired a shot in anger. So what do you do with a brand new heavy bomber and no more war to fight? You put her to work doing the unglamorous jobs. Doc became a radar calibration aircraft. Now the Navy in those days liked to name groups of these support birds after characters, and this particular squadron of 8 airplanes got themselves named after the 7 dwarfs. Sleepy, grumpy, happy, the whole gang. Our airplane was the doctor of the bunch, so they painted a little cartoon Doc on her nose, spectacles and all, and the name stuck for the rest of her life. She soldiered on through the late 40s and into the 50s. And then the Air Force decided she'd outlived her usefulness. So they did what they did with a lot of these magnificent machines. They flew her out to the Mojave, to the gunnery range near China Lake, California, and they parked her in the desert to be used as a target. A target. Picture that for a minute. You take this engineering marvel, this airplane that cost a fortune and a lot of young lives to perfect, and you set her out in the sand so fighter pilots can practice their aim. They'd shoot at the airplanes around her, they'd drop dummy ordnance. The desert did the rest. Sun, wind, 40 years of it. The paint blistered off. The tires rotted to nothing. Sand drifted up into the engine, nacelles and the wheel wells. Birds nested in her. The aluminum skin, the most advanced aluminum airframe of its day, just sat there oxidizing, going dull and chalky and gray. And there she stayed. Decade after decade. Most folks who knew about her assumed that was the end, that she'd eventually get scrapped or shot to pieces, and that would be that. But airplanes like this have a way of finding the right person at the right time. That person was a fella named Tony Mazzolini. Tony was a B-29 man himself, flew in them in the service, and he had it in his head that he wanted to find one, just one, that could be saved. He'd been hunting for years, and in the late 80s, he got wind that there were B-29s out on the China Lake range. He went out there to look, and what he found half buried in the sand was Doc. Now, getting her out was its own war. You don't just walk onto a Navy weapons range and load up a 60-ton bomber. It took Tony the better part of a decade just to navigate the paperwork to convince the Navy to release her, to get the access. Years of letters and phone calls and bureaucracy before anybody ever turned a wrench. It wasn't until the late 1990s that they were finally able to go in, dig her out, and start the long process of getting her ready to move. And here's the part that gets me. They didn't have a runway. They had to truck pieces of her out, and they had to do enough work right there in the desert just to make her safe to transport. Sun-rotted, gutted by the elements, full of sand. The team that went out there worked in heat, that'll knock you flat, pulling this airplane back from the edge of oblivion one piece at a time. She finally came to Wichita in 2000 home. back to the very city, and eventually back into the very kind of building where she'd been born more than half a century before. Boeing offered up space, and that's when the real work started. Let me be honest with you about what restoration actually means for an airplane like this, because I think people hear that word and they picture a fresh coat of paint and some polish. No, this was 16 years. 16 years of work. Better part of 300,000 man-hours, most of it volunteer, retired Boeing engineers. Old-timers who'd actually built these airplanes during the war coming back in their 70s and 80s to teach the youngsters how it was done. Mechanics donating their Saturdays for a decade and a half. Now here's where it gets interesting. There's no parts store for a B-29, you can't order a nacelle off a shelf, so this crew had to learn to manufacture parts that hadn't been made since Harry Truman was in the White House. They scavenged. They begged components off of museum airplanes and other wrecks. They machined pieces from scratch using the original drawings when they could find them. The control surfaces, the wiring, the hydraulics, all of it had to be brought back to airworthy. Not display worthy, airworthy. There's a world of difference. A museum piece just has to look right and sit still. An airplane that's going to carry people into the sky has to be right in every rivet, every line, every weld, because there's no pulling over at 30,000 feet. And those engines, those temperamental Wright cyclones that scared the daylights out of crews in the war. They had to get four of them running and reliable enough that the FAA, the Federal Aviation Administration, would sign off on putting human beings in this airplane and flying it. The FAA does not hand those approvals out for sentiment. You earn every signature. There were lean years. Money ran dry. The project stalled out more than once. There were stretches where Doc sat in that hangar, more whole than she'd been in decades but still grounded, and folks wondered if she'd ever actually fly or if she'd just become the world's most elaborate static display. People moved on. Some of the volunteers who started the project passed away before they ever got to see her in the air. That happens with these long restorations. The airplane outlasts some of the very people who saved her. And I think there's something fitting and sad and beautiful all at once in that. But the crew kept at it. A new organization formed up, Doc's Friends, to push the thing across the finish line. And finally, in the summer of 2016, 16 years after she came home to Wichita, they rolled her out onto the ramp, with all four engines hung and ready. I want you to imagine the sound, because if you've never heard four 18-cylinder radials light off in sequence, you have missed one of the great sounds in all of human invention. It starts with a cough. A puff of blue-white smoke as the oil burns off, then a stumble, a few cylinders catching, and then that deep, lumpy, uneven idle that smooths out into a roar you don't just hear. You feel it. It comes up through your boots, it rattles the change in your pocket. The whole ramp smells like Avgas and hot oil and something almost sweet underneath it. On July 17, 2016, Doc flew, first time off the ground in over half a century. A B-29 that had been a target in the desert, written off, given up for dead, lifted her nose and climbed away from Wichita like the last 70 years had never happened. And just like that, the number of flying B-29s in the world doubled from 1 to 2. That one, the other one you may have heard of her. She's called FEFI, operated by the Commemorative Air Force down in Texas, and for decades, she was the only B-29 flying anywhere, the only one. Just one airplane carrying the entire living legacy of the type on her wings. And now there were two, Doc and FEFI. And the first time those two airplanes flew together in formation, well, there wasn't a dry eye on the field, two of a kind, both back from the brink, sharing the same patch of sky. Today, Doc has a permanent home in Wichita, a hangar, and an education center, and she tours the country in the flying season. You can go see her, you can stand under that enormous wing, all 141 feet of it, and run your hand along skin that a man riveted into place during the war, that another man saved out of the desert, that a third man rebuilt rivet by rivet so you could touch it. Some folks even get to ride. They sell experienced flights to keep her in the air. Because an airplane like this eats money the way those cyclones eat oil, and the only way to keep her flying is to let people share the experience. Now, I get a little grumpy sometimes about where aviation's headed. You all know that about me. But this is the part that keeps me optimistic. Because here's a machine that the Air Force literally threw away, set it out in the sand to be shot at. And a handful of stubborn people decided that wasn't going to be the end of the story. 16 years, 300,000 hours, old men teaching young ones a craft that was supposed to have died with their generation. That's not nostalgia, that's stewardship. That's a torch getting passed, hand to hand, so that some kid standing on a ramp in 20 years can hear those four radials light off and understand in his bones what these airplanes were and what they cost and what they meant. You can't get that from a book. You can only get it from the real thing running and roaring and alive. My thanks today to the folks at Doc's Friends and the Commemorative Air Force, whose own histories of these airplanes fill in the details, and to Boeing's own record of what it took to build the B-29 in the first place. If you want to see where Doc is flying this season, or you've got a story of your own about her, you know where to find me. RadioHangar.com. Go find one of these old birds while you still can. Stand close enough to feel the engines. Trust me, it'll stay with you. This is Taildragger. Keep her between the ditches, and I'll see you next time in the hangar.